and someone sees me, they're like, look how much weight you've gained. Or someone said, hey, fatty, one time.
Are they right?
I feel like they are. I feel like they are. I feel like, you know, I used to be in shape. I used to be this person that was really involved with the church. I was the preacher boy. I was the perfect person to everybody. Even whenever I was the perfect person, I was worried at that time people are judging me. So I've got to live the way they want me to live. Go to church every Sunday. Go to church every Wednesday or Thursday or Tuesday, whenever it was.
So what happened?
Well, got involved speaking at church.
What happened?
What happened was, is I realized eventually down the road that I'm gay.
Okay. When did you know that you were gay?
When I was a little boy.
So tell me the moment.
When I was very young.
Okay.
And I just realized I liked boys.
Okay.
I didn't like sports. I didn't like, you know, roughhousing. I was a very sensitive kid. And I believe it was under 5 years old when I realized, you know, I'm different, you know, than the other guys in school. Didn't have guy friends. I mostly hung out with the girls.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really young when I realized that. But in my mind, I was like, this is wrong. This is wrong. This is wrong. And I suppressed it for years and years.
Suppressed it or hid it? So suppressed it kind of means like you forgot about it, or I'm not trying to be academic,
but
I want to make sure I understand what you actually did. So you hid it. So when you would go to the Baptist church and you would be sitting in church, and I'm assuming you went to a Baptist church that was not in the front of the line leading the marriage equality marches, and they would be talking about homosexuality or about marriage equality, and what would they be saying?
They would saying it was a sin. You'd go to hell for it.
And what would you think?
I thought to myself, then what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do if I'm, you know, to myself, I would think that. If I'm gay, I guess I'm going to hell. As a little boy, I thought that.
Yeah.
For years, I thought I was going to hell, especially if I acted on it.
So did you buy into the lie that being gay is a choice?
Yes.
So you bought into the bullshit and the lies that people peddle about that?
Yeah. I felt judged. I felt like I wasn't normal. I felt like an outcast. And I felt like if I acted like myself, then they would say, oh, he's gay. He's gay. He's definitely gay. I mean, and most guys, other guys could tell I was gay by the way I acted. You know, I'm a very feminine guy. And, it was a lot of, very, very fearful to be seen as gay. 'Cause I felt like this is the worst thing in the world. This is, you know, this is just as bad as murder.
How did it impact your personal relationship with God?
I personally, as a kid, thought God loves every single part of me. If God loves every single part of me, then why not this part? What's bad about this? I'm not out hurting people. I'm not out causing pain. It's just a part of who I am. And they get in the pulpits and churches and they preach, God loves you regardless of your sin, but not this one thing. This is the worst thing. That's the way it felt.
What's interesting is that it's pretty clear that even at a young age, because you were able to question and say, well, that makes no freaking sense. If he loves everything about me, then why this one thing? Like, you, I think, intrinsically know that he loves everything about you, right?
Right.
This is a really important distinction for you, because you seem and you are extraordinarily caught up and consumed by what other people think. And it's not surprising, because you grew up in a church environment where you hid.
Right.
And you hid in order to not be judged, and you hid in order to protect yourself.
I never thought of it like that. And dating girls.
Oh, how'd that go?
Not good at all. At all. It didn't.
Because
I thought if I have a girlfriend or if I get married, oh, he's not gay. You know, he's straight. You
mm-hmm.
know,
mm-hmm.
there would never be that question. Yeah. Took a lot of lying.
I'm a really good liar too, by the way. It takes one to know one.
Right, right. You saw right through me, didn't you, Mel?
I'm just trying to put myself in your shoes think about what it would be like to sit in a church several times a week and be told that I can't be who I am, and to then suppress my very being out of shame and fear and to go into hiding.
Eventually at that church, the leaders of the church mm-hmm. had found out that I was.
What age were you when this happened?
I want to say 18, 19. And when they found out, it was like the world ended in my world.
What happened?
They had found out that someone else and I were together.
So there were lots of gay people hiding in this church.
If you only knew. The word got out about us. And all of a sudden, it was like my world crashed.
What happened?
The leaders of the church, the pastor and his wife, were both like not happy with me that this happened. And you know, what really got to me was the time when, the pastor's wife had looked at me and said, you need to get this under control, because some parents are not even going to want you to be around their kids. What? I'm that bad of a person that I can't even be around to hang out with kids? Like, the parents are going to judge me? Like, whether or not I'm good enough to say hey to your kids? I was a Sunday school teacher at one point, and they took that away from me. I was no longer a Sunday school teacher. That was not a fun thing to hear.
Honestly, it's just a sign of somebody being completely ignorant and stupid and prejudiced. It's ugliness is what it is. And I'm sorry that that happened to you. They didn't kick you out of the church, though?
No, the pastor did look at me one time. He said, do you want to leave this church?
And you stuck around after they did this to you?
I didn't know who I was outside of that. Like, I didn't think I could survive in the world outside of going to church. I thought if I leave church, you know, God's going to strike me dead. I had that thought in my mind that if I leave this church, I'm going to get in a car accident or, you know, some horrible thing is going to happen to me. It's going to be because God was not happy with me.
You know, has it ever occurred to you that God is waiting for you to find yourself and be brave enough to do what you need to do?
It's a good way to look at it. I thought, you know, God does want me to live as who I am. Why wouldn't he? Because that would be lying.
Of course.
God doesn't like liars.
Well,
right?
You tell me. That's your relationship with God, not mine.
I mean, that's how I would see it. I mean, I think God wants us to live who we are.
Well, what do you want?
I want to be Stephen Hill.
And what does that mean?
To unapologetically, in every way, in every sense, love myself. And when you look at me, okay. When if you want to judge me and say you're not following God or the religious version of God, you're going to hell. Okay. Look how much weight you've gained.
Why
okay?
do you care so much?
I guess it's just, I want to be accepted by others.
Well, I think it's probably the result of for years sitting and hiding. Hiding, 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 hiding. Shame, 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 shame. That's what was getting preached to you. And so you did exactly what you were told to do. You were a great choir boy and, you know, whatever, assistant preacher, whatever the heck your church calls them. You did a good job. You hid just like you were told to hide. You felt the shame just like you were told to shame. You branded yourself a sinner just like they told you to do.
Yeah.
That's right. And the problem is that for a long time it was the church and probably your parents and maybe some friends that were doing it to you. And now that nobody else is doing it to you, you're doing it to yourself.
Yeah. Laying on the couch or sitting on the couch or, you know, just in the house. Nobody's telling me these things.
Like you are.
Yeah, exactly. It's me. It's me. It's nobody else. It's
somebody taught you to think this way. And you can break the pattern. You can break the habit of thinking this way. You can become a totally different person that accepts himself. And the thing you have to understand and frankly get pissed off about is that you sat in a church for that many years that pretended to be a place that was about love and actually did tremendous damage to you.
Right.
So after the pastor and the pastor's wife shamed, outed you, and then shamed you, and then stripped you of the privilege of being a Sunday school teacher, what happened next?
For a while, I just kept going. Then fast forward a little bit, and an opportunity came up for me to go to a church in Atlanta. And
okay.
I was there for a few months.
Mm-hmm. What was it like to be in Atlanta? A place that's a little bit more diverse.
Yes, absolutely.
A place that's a little bit more liberal.
I went to my first gay club, gay bar,
mm-hmm.
and I loved it.
I bet you did.
You know, here I am. I've never been to anything like that. And I loved it. Every minute of it. Eventually, I had moved back to North Carolina.
Why did you have to move back?
Well, again, with the church thing. Here I am, you know, starting to accept myself. And I think the pastor was starting to pick up on it. And,
what did he say to you?
He actually told me, this guy told me that I needed to change the way I sound. So instead of, you know, talking like this, like my regular voice, he told me that I need to make my voice like really deep, to make me sound like a man. And,
did he ever ask if you were gay?
Yeah.
And what did you say?
I said that I did feel that way.
And what did he say?
And he told me that I needed to, not act on it. To
resist, my son.
Resist.
Did you ever go to the, illegal therapy that they do?
No.
Good. All right. So, I kind of have the timeline as it relates to the church. Now let's talk about life at home. So you figure out really, really young that you like boys. You're very aware that you're gay. So your mom, did she have any idea that you were gay? I mean, she must have known.
I remember her telling me, if you ever are gay, I will accept you. You know, I remember her saying that to me when I was a little kid.
So how and when did you finally tell her?
I posted it on Facebook in 2015 that I was gay.
So your mother found out that you were gay by your Facebook post?
Yes.
That is a really mean thing to do to your mother.
Well, I felt like if I would have told her in person, it was just going to, you know, it was just going to be one big argument.
I understand, but I want you as a man to understand how manipulative
Absolutely.
That is.
Yeah.
The thing you're not going to like about yourself is how manipulative you are. And it comes from a place, just like my lying came from a place of self-protection. But when you can start to own what a manipulative son of a gun you are, then you will have the power to change. But right now, you're in the zone of what happened to you and what got done to you. And that victim feel to all this is what's keeping you stuck. And here's the irony, dude. You're actually manipulative.
I never thought of it like that.
You are, aren't you?
I think I could see that.
Of course you can. Do you know how much you love sleeping on the couch and using this pity party for a reason to not get your shit together? It's a form of manipulation. What's happening? Why are you getting upset?
Not upset at you, just...
I don't give a shit if you are.
You're revealing things to me that I need to hear.
Yeah. Why is this sting? Why does this make you upset?
Like me being manipulative?
Yes, you.
You know, I thought others were manipulative. I thought they were the bad guy. Like, they were the bad guy, but I'm manipulative.
Of course you are. You lie to people's faces. You tell people exactly what they want to hear so you can stay in their stupid church. You're not honest about the people that you love. You know, you're acting like a victim to make it easy for your mother. You're manipulating the hell out of this situation. Do you see that? So let's name some of the ways that you manipulate people. Let's have some fun.
Okay.
Tell me some of the things you do to manipulate people.
Oh, okay.
Let's have a confession.
Oh, goodness. The way I manipulate people. I guess one way is when my mom says, you're being lazy.
Yeah.
And I give the excuse of, I'm depressed.
Oh, or, yeah. High five right there. There's some manipulation. Okay, what else?
I have anxiety.
Oh, yes. That's a big one. Manipulate.
I care too much about what people think.
Oh, yes. Manipulate.
Look at the things I've been through in life. You know, just all these, these excuses.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, oh, okay.
It works, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You're a genius.
And whenever it's time to go out in public and they want me to go out with them, I'm like, I care too much about what people think. Excuse. Manipulation.
Ooh, yeah, manipulate. Love it.
I never thought of it like that.
Yeah. Well, it takes a liar to see a liar. And it takes a master manipulator to recognize another one. And the best excuse to hide underneath is the victimhood thing. And look, you've been through a lot. And the stuff that you have been put through and the shame that you felt, it's not okay. But there came a moment in time where you were old enough to know better. And there came a moment in time, and you probably might even remember it, where you thought, this is the moment for me to just say, yes, I am gay, and to leave the church and to be brave. And instead, you chose to manipulate the situation and hide. Like, I get a 5 to a 16, 17-year-old sitting in a church pew hiding because you're living at home and you're a child.
Right.
And you're not living in Massachusetts in a Unitarian church. You're in the Deep South in a very conservative church. And so you got a lot of evidence by a lot of adults telling you a lot of stuff that isn't true about what it means to be a gay, you know, girl or boy. And so I understand hiding in that environment. But there was a moment where you knew it was time. And that's when you flipped from victim into master manipulator. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember when it was?
Posting on Facebook?
Maybe, I don't know. I think it might have been when you lied to somebody in one of the churches.
Mm.
That when they kicked you, when they stripped you of your Sunday school position.
Preaching position, all of it.
Yeah. And you stayed.
Yeah.
Like instead of saying, screw all of you, I'm going to go down the street to the Unitarian Church where God loves everybody and they fly a rainbow flag. I'll see you assholes, you know, later. Instead of living in the truth, you were like, okay, I'll just lie to everybody. I get it's all logical. It's all understandable, which is why I can call you a manipulator. Because what I want to do in this conversation is I want to give you back power. I want you to understand you're not the victim of all this shit anymore. And in fact, maybe the last 7 or 8 years, you are 100% responsible for all of this stuff.
Absolutely.
100%.
Yeah.
Every lie, you own it. Every avoidance, you own it. Every excuse, you own it. The anxiety came from the lying, by the way. When do you first remember feeling like an anxiety or a panic attack or something?
Whenever, oh goodness. The first time, I think, was whenever I had went back to church.
Of course!
I had went back to church and,
You're walking in!
Yeah.
They're gonna find me out. Don't tell anybody.
Yeah.
Don't tell them my secret.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go in here and manipulate these people. Yeah. But I'm gonna have a panic attack the entire time.
Yeah. Looking around, worried. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
And now that you're not walking into a church and you don't have that to hide, you've basically created the exact same situation in your life everywhere.
It's like this just keeps manifesting itself in my life. It's a pattern. It's
That's all it is. It's a pattern. Well, you've just gotten to be very good at complaining and about manipulating. You've basically locked yourself into a fortress, and it's everybody else's fault. And you did this to me.
So I'm pinning it on others when actually I should be looking at myself.
The gig is up. It's like somebody cheating once and not fixing their ways. And now cheating becomes a way of life. Lying and manipulating has become a way of life. See, I want you to get out of the habit of saying you have anxiety and saying you have depression. I want you to start looking at all the ways that you're really lying to yourself. You may be afraid to go in public, but that doesn't mean you can't. You may be afraid to get a job, but that doesn't mean you can't. You may be afraid to start to take your health seriously. See, I don't even think you're that lazy. I think as long as you're overweight, people feel sorry for you.
Just like a protection.
Or an excuse.
An excuse.
Do you want people to feel sorry for
you? No. I was sitting on the plane and I actually said I might have to get off.
Why?
Because I thought the seatbelt wasn't going to fit. Uh-huh. And the ladies beside me said, it's okay. They'll bring you a seatbelt extender. And you know, I kept saying, you know, I'm too big for this seat. I wanted them to comfort me, to calm me down. Everything's all right, honey.
And it worked, didn't it?
Yeah, it worked.
Well, see, that's why I would have panic attacks too. Because if I had a panic attack, they were very manipulative. Not in the beginning, like they kind of came because of some unresolved stuff, just like we're talking about with you. But when I have a panic attack, it is a foolproof method to make everybody else rescue me from whatever I'm dealing with. Does that feel right?
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
What are you thinking right now? Like I can see the wheels spinning upstairs.
That I'm not actually a victim. And that this is just... It's all excuses. It's all excuses. Everything. Laying on the couch all day. It's an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
Being overweight is an excuse for me.
Mm-hmm.
Not going out and going on dates is an excuse. I've been lying to myself and manipulating others.
Mm-hmm.
That's why sometimes I'll get on social media and I'll post a really sad post or something. I'm looking for comfort in other people.
Mm-hmm.
And this right here, the my weight,
mm-hmm.
is looking for comfort.
Mm-hmm.
My mindset, my words, the way I act, not wanting to go out in public. It's manipulating people.
Isn't it kind of funny?
It's like, whoa, the table has definitely been turned.
Well, look, me feeling sorry for you, it's actually not going to help you change.
No, absolutely not.
I also want to make sure you understand something.
Okay.
The fact that you're a manipulator, it's a really good thing. I know it sounds like a bad word, but you developed that as a strategy to survive. You got two choices when you're about to be found out, right? One is fold, admit, have the courage, go out into the open, live your truth, all that stuff. Very difficult for a lot of us to do. The other thing, if you're going to continue on with the charade, is you start to manipulate the entire situation. To me, that pattern is something powerful because you made a choice and because you are in control of the things that you're doing. What's good about that is that that pattern becomes a habit where you're in control of it, of your excuses. You're in control of being lazy. You're in control of hiding. You're in control of manipulating everybody. And that means that we can actually teach you how to do the opposite, so that the habit becomes not hiding and not manipulating and not, you know, listening to excuses, but it actually becomes becoming the Stephen that takes action, the Stephen that doesn't have excuses, the Stephen that is off the couch. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very, I'd rather have you be a manipulator than a victim.
Yeah.
In this situation. Because when you're a victim, it feels like the weight of the world is on you. And it feels so overwhelming to overcome it. When you can fully embrace, holy shit, like I'm like actually a little bit of a liar. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Oopsie. I'm pretty good at this. I can hide in the most conservative churches in the world.
That could be used as like a superpower, couldn't it? Like,
of course, if you use it for good.
For good, yeah.
Well, and you used it for good. You were hiding from judgment. Do you understand me?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm walking a fine line here because obviously manipulating is not a good thing to do to people. But you did it to yourself and you did it because you were afraid and you did it because you didn't want to be judged. And that means that if you got this superpower where you can navigate things and where you can make yourself do things that you don't feel like doing, and maybe it's hiding, then you also have the superpower to be able to manipulate your excuses and manipulate your laziness and manipulate your anxiety.
I think that's genius.
Why?
Because if you can be lazy, manipulate yourself to be lazy, then you have the power to manipulate yourself to get your life together. Stop being lazy.
Yeah. You know?
Wow. Like, that's awesome.
Well, it's just this idea that you're in control. When you decide that you're a victim, which you have for years, you basically are convincing yourself over and over and over again that you have no control. When you can start to own your own part in it, then you have the control to change it. See, the cool thing is that when you're open about who you are and what you're thinking about and what you're doing and just you have this level of badass honesty, if people react negatively, it's their issue.
Right.
The hardest piece about being a manipulator is that when the pastor and the pastor's wife find out, and when the minister up in Atlanta finds out, and when people that you've been manipulating find out that you're actually a liar, their upset is on you. Because you weren't upfront about who you are. And this is a critical distinction for you to understand. Because those of us that lie and manipulate, we think we're doing it for other people. we think we're doing it to make it better for our moms or for our dads or for the friends around us, so we don't tell the truth. And when you make a decision that you're going to manipulate who you are because you think it'll make everybody else comfortable and you think it'll save your ass, if people react negatively when they find out, you're 100% responsible for that breakdown. But when you live fully open in your truth, Stephen, as a gay man, if people react negatively, it's their bullshit. Do you understand? And that will be one of the most liberating things that you will discover. I would be willing to guess that a lot of your anxiety comes from constantly being in a situation where you're worried about being found out, where you're worried that you're going to find that people are going to react negatively because for so long you lied. That's the source of the anxiety. And the second that you own that you lie, that you manipulate, and that means that you also have the power to manipulate your excuses and manipulate your laziness and manipulate your anxiety and say, yep, I feel lazy, but I'm going to the gym anyway. Yep, I feel nervous I'm going to bump into somebody, but I'm running to the grocery store because my mom needs my help. Yep, I feel anxious about getting a job, but I'm going to manipulate my way right through that anxiety and I'm going to go apply anyway. When you start living like that, the anxiety will disappear. And you'll start to care less and less and less about what other people are thinking because you're actually doing things that you want to do. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Seems like the freedom that I would feel I would feel amazing. I thought growing up life would be so different.
What'd you think it'd be like?
I thought I was going to be this amazing, bright, living my dreams, traveling the world, you know, meeting these amazing people, doing huge things. And here I am, living on my mother's couch.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me feel like sick of myself.
Okay.
Because it's like everything I go after, I end up failing at.
Is that true, or at some point do you get scared and you start to hide? Because it's an old pattern.
That right there. Scared and I hide.
Let's think about a really irritating, annoying blabbermouth. Use one of the judgy preachers for a second.
Okay, okay.
The wife.
Are you sure?
Yes! Wait, you still go to that stupid church?
Well, they might watch this.
I don't give a shit. Maybe they'll learn something about how you should treat people and what it actually means to be gay and how to talk to somebody when they come out of the closet and have the courage.
Her name is Sharon.
Sharon. Great. So whenever you have your thoughts drift, okay, to some bull cocky, I want you to picture Sharon. Okay? Is that a good name?
Yeah.
So is it annoying when Sharon talks and gripes and like tells you to worry about all this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
So when you start the pattern of thinking stuff that doesn't serve you, I'm fat, I'm lazy, no one's going to hire me, I'm going to get a speeding ticket, I'm going to be sweating, you're going to be like, go away, Sharon.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you own this?
Yes. Yes. So when the nagging thoughts come.
Uh-huh.
Shut up, Sharon.
Yes.
And then just go back to that feeling of I'm a great person.
Yes. You've got to start to see that the old chapter is about hiding. Hiding who you are. Hiding from the things that scare you. Hiding, hiding, hiding. And that as we turn the page and we look at this new chapter, you talked about feeling awesome. You talked about feeling powerful. And you also have got to be seen. And that means leaving the house every day. Where's the place that you're the most worried to go?
Grocery stores.
Grocery stores?
Because everybody, you know, every time I go to a grocery store, I always see somebody that I know.
Okay.
Or who knows me.
Okay. So let's role play a little bit.
Okay.
You walk into the grocery store. Who's somebody you're scared to see?
Someone from church or from high school.
Okay. So Sharon, is in the aisles. She's pulling some cereal down.
Mm-hmm.
You walk in, you see her. What are you afraid she's going to say?
Why aren't you going to church anymore? Or maybe look me up and down. You know, you can,
yeah.
you can see when somebody's observing you.
Yeah.
You know.
So what do you do if somebody's observing you and then they say nothing?
I try to hide.
Okay, good. That's the old chapter. The new chapter is about being seen. It's about power. It's about awesomeness. So what do you do if you see Sharon and she looks you up and down? What do you do?
Just keep, you know, hey, Sharon, how you doing, girl?
Perfect.
You know?
Make her uncomfortable. Yes.
How you doing, girl? You know, talk to you doing good, girl? How you doing? What you doing? You know.
And then if she says, why haven't you been coming to church? What would you say?
I've been living my best life.
Perfect. Or, you know, I don't feel comfortable coming to church.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
I've embraced myself, just loving myself.
Yes.
This is who I am.
Yes. And you even got like the head cock going when you do this.
How you
if
doing?
She says, boy, you've gotten heavy, what do you say?
Girl, yes, I have.
Yeah. Now, there's one other thing. Your mom.
Yeah.
I want you to talk to her.
And not through Facebook. In person.
Well, you live with her. You're chewing on your lip. Why?
That conversation in my head can go one or two ways. It can go really good, or I don't want to hear that. That's not true. You're not gay. So it's like there's some angst about having that conversation. I know.
That angst is normal. Remember, what's the rule about telling people the truth and being exactly who you are? Whose problem is it if your mom has a negative reaction?
That's hers.
Why?
She's in charge of how she responds.
Correct. And who's responsible right now as you're manipulating the situation by not talking about it?
Me.
Correct. I don't know if it'll be an easy conversation. I don't know what she's going to do. I suspect that since you've been out now for almost 3 years and you're sleeping on her couch, that she has made some level of peace with it. But I don't know. What are you afraid of?
Sorry. Will she still love me? Will she still accept me? Will she kick me out? Sometimes sometimes I still feel like that little boy who just wants his mama's love. I'm sorry.
You don't need to apologize. You're being honest. You're being honest. It's when you were sitting there.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Don't apologize. This is how you feel, Stephen. As you were explaining how scared you are, I was envisioning a 7-year-old boy sitting in church being afraid about whether or not God still loves him.
I don't want to be that little 7-year-old boy anymore.
Every day that you don't have the conversation with your mom, you're that 7-year-old sitting in a church pew manipulating the situation out of fear. It's totally understandable. Guy, that fear is real. But it's a choice to live there. She knows you're coming to Boston. She knows you're probably going to come back and want to talk about this. Or does she not know you're here?
She knows I'm here. She's very excited. She's very excited for me to come.
Why?
She thought this would help me get unstuck. This would be that push.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if she knew that you and I were going to be talking about this.
How could she not know? maybe she doesn't know how to bring it up either. She's already accepted you. You live with her. She's already told you that she loves you no matter what. This is about you making it right. And then you're going to start doing that in every area. You're going to make it right with your body. You're going to make it right by getting a job. You're going to make it right by getting your ass out of that house every single day. When you get home, I want you to go to the grocery store every single day. It's going to be busy. You're going to be bumping into all kinds of crazy people.
Thanks, Mel. Yeah, that's perfect.
And most importantly, we got to get crystal clear about what the old chapter was.
The old chapter in description is a person who manipulated others so that he could be lazy, so that he could have the excuse of anxiety, have the excuse of not wanting to live to his fullest potential. That's a very sad chapter.
Yes. Can you now do that chapter in your grocery store voice?
Girl, that person was so lazy. He was nothing. He was always whining, always complaining, never wanting to do what he needed to do, just sitting around all the time. And it was all excuses. Every time somebody would tell him something that he didn't want to hear, he'd get mad and go cry somewhere. Girl, it was too much. I'm done with it. Now moving into a more serious voice.
Yeah, yeah.
He's just loving himself.
Awesome. He's not hiding.
I always saw everyone else as like the bad guy when it was just my decisions. It was my choices. It was up to me. It was no one ever had any power over me to make what was in my mind to make me believe anything. It was just me.
There is a light in you. You're the one that turned it off. And in this next chapter, you get to turn that light back on. That is power. That is awesomeness. And that is what it means to be seen.
Everyone deserves to be fabulous. Everyone. You're not supposed to be pathetic. It's not who you're supposed to be. You deserve to be the light that you were born to be. Turn the light on.
Oh, turn the light on. Isn't that beautiful? I get chills thinking about the possibility that's now in front of Stephen. The thing that he said that I love the most is this. No one ever had the power over me to make what was in my mind, to make me believe anything. It was just me. And that brings us to takeaway number one from this episode. Stephen was manipulated by other people as a child, and he was victimized by it. So it's natural that he would start repeating the pattern of victimizing himself as an adult. But now that he sees that he's repeating these patterns, he has the power to change it. So ask yourself, are there patterns that you learned from the adults in your childhood that you're still repeating that don't work for you? Because seeing the destructive behavior as a pattern is the first step to owning it and ultimately ending it. And that brings me to takeaway number two. It's a tool you can use to actually destroy the pattern. And that's shut up, Sharon. One of the ways you can take control over your mind is to exaggerate and make the negative things that you say to yourself into a character. Stephen, for example, told that negative voice in his head to shut up, Sharon. And you can do the same thing. If you have a problem with negative self-talk, here's what I want you to do. First, pick a name. And it could be someone you don't like very much. It could be a fictional character. And then I want you to borrow the shut up, Sharon concept. You might say to yourself, knock it off, Mike. Or perhaps you're going to say, I'm not listening, Lisa. It doesn't matter the name you use. It doesn't matter the little phrase you come up with. Just name it and tell it to shut up. And whenever you catch yourself speaking negatively, That's when you're going to pull out this character and you're going to cut it off. Now, our 13-year-old son has used this exact same strategy to fight his anxiety, and he's done it by naming his anxiety Oliver. Whenever anxiety comes into his head or he feels it coming in his body, he knows that Oliver is there. Then he tells Oliver to go away. He might say, "Shut up, Oliver. I've heard him say, Oliver, you're not invited. I've heard him say, Oliver, you're not allowed. Oliver, you're not coming." By naming it, he takes control of his thoughts and he overrides the anxiety in his mind. And I'll tell you what, it's pretty amazing how effective it is. And let me also make one more point about this naming tool based on some of the other coaching sessions that you've listened to. You've probably started to notice that we've been naming behavior. We did it in Kim's coaching session, in Jesse's coaching session, and in Evelyn's. During those coaching sessions, I asked each one of them to not only describe the old behavior patterns that have them stuck, but also to label them and the new positive behaviors that they wanted to adopt. So for Kim, for example, she's either acting like a big baby, like she has in her past, or she's Kim Possibility. Jesse, same thing. She's either stuck as the fat narcissist, or she's living her future self light as a fairy. Evelyn is the Richmond Evelyn, or she's in her glow-up as Daly City Evelyn. When you turn old behaviors into a caricature, you actually remove your emotion and drama and heaviness around it, and it makes the behavior more objective. Now, that's going to help you not only identify the negative behaviors quickly, but it's also going to help you move into the new behavior, the new chapter, instantly. It's like flipping a mental switch. You can snap out of the old behavior or the old chapter and into the new one the moment you see it. Now, the concept that we've just discussed in Stephen's coaching segment, "Shut up, Sharon," it's just an extension of that tool, only we're teaching you to use it to change negative thought patterns. By turning your old negative thinking pattern into a caricature, you can then use it to change your thought process in an instant, simply by saying, "Shut up, Sharon," and moving on. Now, the third takeaway is really, really important, and it's on the topic of manipulation. When you're afraid to upset other people and you use that fear to justify not being yourself, not telling the truth, not showing up, it's actually a form of manipulation. So let me unpack this for a minute. If you live your life in a way where you avoid upsetting people at all cost, so you keep quiet, that's a form of manipulation. If you're afraid of hurting people's feelings or disappointing them, and so you lie, that's a form of manipulation. If you hate confrontation, so you don't tell the truth about how you're feeling, that's a form of manipulation. And what's the golden rule of manipulation? Well, you learned it in this coaching session with Stephen. When you manipulate people, you're responsible when they get upset if they find out the truth. But if you have the courage to just say how you're feeling or to tell them what's true for you, when they get upset or they react negatively, it's on them. You know, having the courage and the clarity to just be yourself, that's what it means to be truly fabulous. In this coaching session, you're going to meet Kyle, a guy who's hell-bent on finding love, growing his real estate business, and making a difference in other people's lives.
My name's Kyle. I'm 33 years old from Chicago, Illinois. I'm a realtor. I also drive for Lyft. I came here to help me finish some things in my life, and I'm excited for the opportunity to come and hopefully inspire some other folks to understand what's already inside of them.
Now, I fell in love with Kyle's enthusiasm, and one thing I know for sure is you can't inspire other folks unless you get your own shit together. This coaching session is a master class in why it is critical to make peace with your past if you want to have a powerful future. And here's another thing that I know, having coached so many people. It's that you always know when you hit on the truth, because people react viscerally when you call them out on shit they don't want to deal with. And boy, do I call Kyle out on how incomplete he is about his past, and it sounds like this.
First of all, it's terrifying to tell people I'm sober, especially, you know, it still is. It's still the fear of being rejected for a good choice.
Who the fuck cares?
I get it. I mean, talking about it objectively, it totally makes sense.
But see, you don't own the sobriety yet. You're not proud of it.
Because I feel like I got on the defense early in these new relationships, and I'm like people are like, well, why are you sober? Why this?
But hold on.
Sorry.
Do you see how rattled you're getting?
Yeah, because it's something that I'm like, I'm pissed off about.
Why?
Because I shouldn't have to fucking defend my decisions.
Excuse me. Why are you, did your whole body language just changed?
I'm sure it did.
Uncross your fucking arms. Nobody is attacking you.
It's totally vulnerable.
You're listening to live coaching sessions with real people.
Hi, Mel. I'm Aisha Hamid from Pakistan.
Love you, Mel.
Hi, Mel. I want to be coached by you.
Pick me, Mel.
Hi, Mel. My name's Luisa. I'm from Brazil.
54321. Come on, Mel Robbins. Please pick me.
Facing real problems.
Anxiety of what other people think.
Self-acceptance is my biggest thing.
Procrastination is causing me to just build a wall. The fear of losing weight.
That shit's deep as fuck.
And experiencing real change.
That's powerful.
That was the Real Talk Express.
Oh, shit.
Now I really know what to do, and I feel empowered.
That is nuts, Mel. You blew my shit away.
This is Kick-Ass with Mel Robbins.
We're going to do great.
Yes, we are. I love that you're giving me a pep talk.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, guys. So tell me about your background. Like, where did you grow up?
My parents were married, but my dad split pretty early, about 6 months in. My grandmother, who is my heart and soul, was the other parent for a long time. There was always a constant flow of love and things like that, but definitely didn't have a male role in my life until I was about 8. My mom met someone, which is great, and we love each other today, but it was a hard transition. They met and got married within a year, and all of a sudden, I had this male role in my life, and I was used to being the star, the center of attention. Sharing that space was definitely tough.
So how old were you when your dad left?
6 months.
And
I've never met him.
Ever?
Ever. Someone from his camp reached out on my 26th birthday. Some woman called my grandma's house and wanted my phone number, and my grandma was like, who is this? And she's like, well, it's from his dad. And she's like, well, okay, you can leave your number and I'll give it to him. And if he'd like to call you, he will. And she was flabbergasted. But I chose that he chose to miss out on the awesomeness of me. So if you don't get to be there when I need you, you don't get to be there when you might need me.
So it's not something that's complete for you, though.
No. No, we'll get into the fact that I used to drink quite a bit.
When did you start drinking?
Oh, I mean, early we go in my house. I was like a latchkey kid, and my friends and stuff would come over, and my folks had, you know, booze in the house, and we'd be like, ooh, let's see what gin tastes like. This had to be probably like 12, 13.
How much were you drinking in high school?
Every weekend, definitely, by my...
To blackout?
Sure. Most days.
So did your mom know?
I'm sure she suspected. Yeah.
Wow. Tell me a little bit about your evolution drinking.
Totally.
Because it sounds like it started as a curiosity.
100.
However, I don't know of a lot of sixth graders that are really hitting the vodka out of curiosity.
Totally. So what I haven't mentioned yet, too, is that I had OCD as a kid as well. I would do things in sets of 8.
Do you remember when that started?
Yeah, it was like 8 or 9, right when my stepdad came in, right when the change of living situation. There was like,
how did your mother tell you she was getting remarried and he was moving in?
I didn't meet him until right before the wedding. I like they we were kept separate. Like two dogs about to go to a fight or something.
How did that make you feel?
Like shit. It was rough. First of all, like, I was losing my control and power in the house. I was losing my relational power with my mother. There was a more important male coming in her life. As somebody who also didn't have a father, it was tough. It was really tough to do that.
You know, it's interesting because clearly you've been through a lot of therapy.
I have.
I can tell because the way in which you describe this has a very clinical nature.
Sure.
And so when you describe the fact that your mom had met somebody new, you talk about it from the lens of power.
Yeah.
But you don't actually talk about it in terms of how a 7 or an 8-year-old actually feels. What did it feel like truly? Mm-hmm. In terms of the abandonment or the fear that this was happening?
There was fear that somebody I didn't know was now in my house.
Mm-hmm.
There was a fear that I'd lose my mom too. There was fear that I wasn't good enough for him either. Even in the fact that I feared him and feared the change, there's still a child in there that just wants to be loved and just wants to, wanted somebody to say, you're cool, man. You're the shit. Go on, grow, be great. Let me support you.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was, there's a lot of that's stayed in there for a long time.
Well, it started, I'm sure, with your dad leaving.
Yeah.
And, when your mom didn't introduce you to him and didn't make it safe and kept him away, I'm sure it actually just made it scarier.
I remember just being like, but why? Why can't I meet him? Why? And there wasn't an answer.
So when did you go from sad to angry?
It had to be quick. I was angry and I was sad. So there was a kind of perfect storm also too of the stepdad coming in,
mm-hmm.
and the change of circumstance where my grandma actually moved to Colorado at that almost overlapping. And so then it became this vacuum of like new parent figure and loss of rock strong, most stable love bond that I have ever had being 1,000 miles away.
Holy shit.
Yeah. It got,
you were 8?
I was 8. 8 is great. 8's still my lucky number, but 8 is a place that...
How the fuck is 8 your lucky number?
Who the fuck knows?
Seriously.
I don't know. It is. It always is. It always is, and it shows up everywhere in my life.
One of the things that I love about you immediately is how positive you are, but the thing that really... It's just right in my face when I listen to you, is that there is something that is so unresolved underneath the surface. My fear about your ability to truly start the next chapter of your life and to put this chapter in the past and to be able to turn the page is that you've missed the real lesson of all of this. The drinking on some level became about power and became a gigantic fuck you, but it actually started as a desire to disappear. And then I think when nobody notices that you've disappeared, it becomes even more painful.
Wow. That's some shit. Yeah. Yeah, there certainly were, like, there was a lot of things I would do too, to just like, fucking look at me! See me! I'm right here. There was a lot of things that that's deep. That's some shit.
And I think that's the shit that's still here.
Yeah.
And that's where you don't have power and that's where you're not happy.
Yeah.
And that what the next chapter for you is about is to really complete that for yourself and to see a different angle on all those ways in which you behaved in the past that were coming from a really deep place of hurt and then seeing how that gets carried forward. You were screaming